right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there and welcome to the show. Big thanks to Conor Bean for driving us through the bank holiday afternoon. It is Monday, October 27th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7, Austin O'Malley, Alan Cawley and Barry Murphy are with us to chat Gaelic Games, County Finals, League of Ireland drama, Premier League upsets and of course debate our weekend sporting highlights. We'll also have the latest from the Ireland women's camp ahead of their Nations League playoff in Belgium. So do get in touch with your weekend highlights. You can text 51552 or message us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Dedication, loyalty. It's what we're all about here in Game On. That's why Alan Cawley and Austin O'Malley have come into the studio on a bank holiday, gentlemen. On
Shane,
a bank holiday.
Hey, if you didn't know that at this stage, Shane, you would never know.
We are
that.
Loyal, that's if anything.
Come on. Game On loyal.
Gentlemen, how are we? Alan Cawley, good bank holiday?
Yeah, lovely. Well, lovely weekend, Shane, yeah. Weather wasn't great, but certainly in terms of my activities, they were all good. Sporting ones, mainly, to be honest with you. I was in Sligo at the game on Saturday night, so we'll discuss that later on. Then obviously covering a lot of the games yesterday as well. So yeah, good weekend so far, Shane.
An action-packed weekend of sport, I'm sure. The same for yourself, Austin?
Yeah, no, brilliant weekend, I have to say. Was in the capital for most of it, but got eyes on an awful lot of all the club football. I think we'd a feast of county finals across the board, and we'll delve into them later. But yeah, a lot of maiden victories and teams going back-to-back and three in a rows and all of that. But yeah, super, super weekend.
Yeah, the famine over for Shamrock Gales.
Shamrock Ales.
Shamrock Ales.
You heard the story.
Let's just dive into our weekend. Not to preempt that perhaps Shamrock Ales ending a 33-year wait for a Sligo County title might be on the lips of Alan Cawley or even yourself, Austin.
Go on, Austin. Go on. I'll go first.
Obviously, a feast of football over the weekend, and as I
some brilliant stories. It was a leading question just because the gentleman beside us, to be fair, Austin.
Yeah,
I know there's plenty of stories.
But I'd have to sidestep that. And for me, the weekend, obviously, a huge amount of football, but a story, and I suppose maybe just from my own background in performance. And I was in the capital the weekend, and the marathon was on, and I went down to it. First of all, the event itself is just incredible in terms of the numbers it brings in, and to see the support for the people that are running. And you've all the different stories in terms of, I suppose, people running for, different charities and events and so on. But I think young Ava Crane stole the show. I really do think in terms of it was only a name that I'd become aware of probably the week leading into it with a little bit of the stuff that I'd read about her.
Yeah.
But in terms of the performance she put in, and I suppose in sport we love a story and an outlier or someone that does has that kind of breakthrough moment. But I thought in terms of what she delivered, given her backstory that she hadn't ran really competitively since, up to the point of...
6 months ago.
6 months ago. April was her first marathon ever. Now, she's 19, a Raheen's native in Limerick, studying over in Manchester, ran her first marathon in Manchester. An incredible, incredible feat. And then to rock up and to win the national title here. Now, she'd obviously put in a performance in, I think, the Limerick, the Great North run as well. And I think she had won the Charleville one as well. But just, I suppose, when you think of it as a 19-year-old, and the marathon is generally all about sort of the older athlete that they come in terms of endurance, that have maybe a career put down under them on the track. And she's never run on track. And only came to running through COVID to build her fitness and so on. Now, she's from a mixed, I think, sports background. She'd played a bit of basketball.
Yeah, a couple of underage squads for Ireland.
In Ireland and that. But I just think it's an incredible story. And she didn't have a coach for her first marathon that she took on. She took it on as a bit of fun. And she's later developed, I think there's a guy in Limerick, John Kinsella, who's her coach now that has taken her over. And he is the founding member, I think, of the... Back to Boston Club, isn't it? Yeah, so he's doing incredible work there as well. But I just think, what a performance from a young athlete. And I think, when you think about where this young woman could go in terms of her career. And I just thought her interview afterwards, the emotion and just the innocence and the rawness of it was absolutely brilliant. She was saying she was tying up with 10K to go and her legs were just filled with lactic acid and she just kept saying, keep going, keep going. She started spotting her friends along the way and so on. And, you know, just I think it was a magic moment for a young girl.
2:34:11.
What a time. 2:34.
So sixth overall
and the national title. And
that's just to run one anyway.
Yeah. Oh. 9 minutes off her prior PB or whatever. Yeah. You know, like, which is just incredible. So
that whole 6 months ago running her first competitive race, which was her first marathon, it's absolutely outstanding. And you talk about some of the older athletes and these ones coming through. Two-time national champion Anne-Marie McGlynn, and there's a beautiful photo. Anne-Marie McGlynn, 45 years of age, was the second Irish woman to cross the line, finishing 8th overall in 2:36.24. But the picture of Anne-Marie and Ava together, just like someone who has done so much for Irish athletics and there's just this up-and-coming talent.
She's a warrior
Anne-Marie
as well.
Congratulating Ava was just... Yeah, was brilliant. But as you say, just to complete the marathon.
Yeah.
It's an incredible feat. I mean...
I passed a fair few of them yesterday, a couple of former teammates as well.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, Gavin Whelan. I passed Gav was, and he was really struggling. It was just along here coming around by Vincent's Hospital. I think you're on the home stretch then. Yeah. And he was really struggling and I just happened to see him and went down and gave him a bit of a G up and he says, I'm really struggling. I said, come on.
It's such a great event to attend.
It is, but do you know what? I peppered around because I had a bit of breakfast earlier in the morning, and you could see the support of people's, you know, parents and loved ones and so on. And I nipped in during it, and you could see guys and girls. You know, they were watching. They obviously were tracking them on their apps and that, and saying, I could hear in my, you know, just my earshot, he's coming through the Phoenix Park now. Yeah. You know, and you know that was just a real. I thought it was a brilliant signal of, you know, just, you know. In terms of the support that somebody needs when they take something on like that, it's a hell of a 26.2 miles. It's a hell of a distance. Now Alan was saying off air that he's gonna sign up and do one with me.
Sorry, I didn't want to put you on the spot. I was like, good weekend, lads. I was waiting for one. You say, well, actually, yeah, completely
we'll
the Dublin Marathon, sure. Lads. Yeah,
we do it together. After yourself and yourself.
We'll do it on our own.
Yeah. I wouldn't even run when I'm supposed to run, so I'm hardly going to do it now.
So you're one of these guys that sat in the pocket in centre midfield
That's
and sort
me,
of just sprayed it around. Let those lads do all the run up and down the wings.
Stephen Bradley and Glenn Cronin, of course, completing the marathon as well, and then a helicopter Derry City. We'll touch on all of that in the League of Ireland chat. Barry Murphy will be joining us. And for any of your friends, now it's your time to give mention and complete the marathon, Austin, or any other teammates.
I had no one that I'd known. Yeah, previously I've had mates that have done it in that as well. And you know,
there was a few people delayed to Daly Mount because they were cycling around.
I met a Bulls fan and he ran over to me with the boat and he starts going, I'm going straight to Daly Mount
from the marathon. Yeah, that's some going.
That's dedication.
His name was Killian. He tweeted me about it last night, so there you go.
I almost actually, Craig English, a friend of mine, suffered an Achilles injury, but he completed the Dublin Marathon, and there was a few lads that cycled the course with him as well. So
brilliant,
a few delayed
brilliant,
into
brilliant. From an injury like that's incredible. Yeah,
yeah. There was a stage where didn't know if he was going to even be able to partake in it because of it stopped training for such a long time with the injury. But massive credit to Ingo for completing the marathon, and for everyone else that completed. I think Leo the Lion, the mascot, set a new world record, the fastest time for a mascot to run.
Leo the Lion,
I believe.
There
so.
You go.
So I believe so.
Akuma Matata.
I believe so. What caught your eye, so Alan Colley?
I'm going to stay on the same kind of theme and the human stories, Shane. So Keith Anders, obviously a big, brilliant one. Mentioned to Stephen Rice as well, doing great things, the two of them. And I think I read a stat about Irish Premier League managers that we've only had 8. Something like that, anyway. So to have Keith doing so well at the moment is absolutely amazing. Beating Liverpool. Shamrock Gales, obviously a big story, their first one in 33 years, and there was some lovely Gaelic club stories around. I think Dingle was 77 years, was it, Austin?
Yeah, incredible.
Absolutely incredible. The only downside of the club stories when you're watching the games, and I know it's just kind of circumstance, the weather to get for these, because obviously the time of year that the games, and it always seems to be played in really bad weather, but that doesn't take away from the I suppose the glory and the brilliance of the stories and the celebrations today that are going on around the country.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But my one is Jack Lazowski. You know my penchant.
Snooker.
My penchant for snooker, Shane. And was
what could have been, Austin? Were you here for that show? What could have been?
What could have been?
Could have been the next Ken Doherty that
love.
First love.
Love the snooker. So Jack Lazowski, for anyone who doesn't know, is best friends of Judd Trump. He's been a professional player for the last 14, 15 years. He's got the 7 ranking finals never won one. He's been beaten by Trump and a couple, beaten by Robertson, beaten by a few of the top boys, but he's a brilliant, brilliant player himself. But it was almost getting to the stage where people are thinking he's never going to get over the line. So the tournament was on in Belfast during the week, the Northern Ireland Open, and of course he faces Trump in the final, his best friend. But went to a decider, 8-all, but Jack Lazowski's dad passed away 8 months ago as well, and Trump was by his side when he found out and got the message. The word came through, they were over in China playing a tournament, the word came through, they were out in a restaurant, that his dad had passed away. So obviously heartbreaking news for him, and the last 8 months has been so up and down for him, and trying to deal with that but carrying on with his career. But he got to the final anyway this week, playing really, really well, beating some of the top players along the way as well, but went to a decider and he got over the line. Now he stumbled over the line, but the moments afterwards and the embrace with the two of them, and Trump was so magnanimous, as you could imagine it. He's a classy fella anyway, regardless of who he's playing, but you could imagine, like, I suppose the competitive side went out the window. They were just hugging and kissing each other for about 5-10 minutes, and he spoke afterwards, Lazowski, of not only is Judd a brilliant player, but told a story about where they were the night he found out, and he says for the last 8 months he's been like a brother, the brother that I never had. We've been friends for nearly 20 years, but he says the last 8 months he's just been incredible. So it was just an unbelievable moment. It's plastered all over my social media this weekend, Shane, for anyone that didn't see it. But watch out for him as well, because they're hoping even afterwards, Jimmy White speaking, Alan McManus, and they've all known about this boy's talent for a long time, but they're hoping now that he's got the first one out of the way, that the floodgates may open. And
will they? Do you think they will?
I think they will, Shane, yeah. He's a brilliant talent. Nobody ever disputed the talent. It's just, like to say about any sport, really, especially individual ones, just getting over the line in that first one. And he got to 7 finals and never did. And then the doubts start to creep in. Fans are kind of implying that he never will. Does he have the bottle? The usual kind of questions that come up. But for him to get over the line last night in the manner that he did, it was unbelievable. There wasn't a dry eye out in the house. The presenter as well, Rachel, who presented it. It was amazing. It was just an unbelievable moment.
That's great. That's great. You'd love to hear that.
It's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I'm not sure what my sporting highlight from the weekend
Limbs God, is I all
wonder.
I'd say.
I wonder.
Describe it to us.
Take us through it.
It was very bleak at the start of the match for any Shelburne fans watching on, as there was talk in the mono stand that this could get ugly. When Bowes went 2-up, it could have been 3 or 4. Shells, they just looked jaded. Obviously coming back from Macedonia during the week and conceding a last-minute goal to lose that match. Mentally, you would think, how's that going to affect them?
Yeah.
A lot of changes in the team. They were coming to it in great form, and 51552 is the text number, and Kieran Amid says Joey O'Brien is doing some job with Shelburne. Since Joey O'Brien has gone, and I know you've mentioned this on the show before, Alan, since he's come on board, it was absolutely it's an incredible turnaround. And I know you're saying turnaround, they are the league champions at the moment, but they got into a bit of a rut.
I think he said himself in one of the interviews afterwards, Shane, he said we've been the form team over the last kind of so he's fully aware of it himself, Joey, like, you know,
but to go 5 in a row, the John Martin goal I think was very important to bring it back to 2-1. And then it was horrible conditions, really, rain, wind, the whole lot. But to leave it so late in those circumstances, considering what was online, securing European football for next year, and they're still in a chance to get second, and that could be Europa League, depending on if Shamrock Rovers win the FAI Cup. But 86 minute, and then for Kerry McEnroy in the 96 minute.
It's been brilliant all year, McEnroy.
It was some strike.
There was a lot of frustration, I think, with certain calls from the officials. Kasper Taratska, the Bulls goalkeeper, was booked for time wasting, so there was frustration. Yeah. And then for just to unleash that.
It reminded me of, do you remember Gerrard's goal against West Ham?
Yes.
The last kick of the game where he just banged.
Yeah.
Because if you watch it, actually, McEnroy's, he's off the ground when he hit it.
Yeah.
And the strike is so clean.
He gets everything through it.
The strike is so clean. It's past the goalkeeper before he even sees it. Because some people might be thinking, you know, should the keeper have saved it? But
Taratska made an unbelievable save, a reaction save. I think it might have been Harry Ward. I can't remember who the Shelburne player was. But basically, he just stuck a paw out and it just hit off and went out. And it was, everyone, I was more stunned at that than the 96-minute winner.
For Wood as well, Shane.
Harry Wood's been excellent.
In terms of a player, and you're speaking with the manager since he's come in, but two players for me that have stood out. Obviously, McEnroy, who's been brilliant all season. Henry Francis has come in recently, but Coote and Harry Wood, and he started to play those two in those advanced positions that Damien wasn't really playing. Two of them, he's allowed them to flourish, but Harry Wood, and he has this unbelievable habit, which is a great habit, popping up with big goals. The winning goal in the Brandywell, couple in Europe this year, yeah. getting the equaliser yesterday.
And it was the only creative threat in the first half as well. That looked like there's a man who was trying something when everyone else looked like they were out of ideas in the 20th or 30th minute.
He's a brilliant player, Wood, yeah.
It was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, at some setting, it's Wes O'Sherrow and Harry now.
That's, oh, is it, yeah?
That's 11. And Alan Colley, of course.
Of course. Don't forget that one.
47th place, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, we're going to take a short ad break. We're going to continue our League of Ireland chat. Of course, the champions elect are still champions elect, not champions as of yet. And we'll return to plenty of county finals drama. And we're going to hear from Ireland women's captain Katie McCabe as she approaches her 100th cap for the girls in green.
Game on. Association football.
Now, the Ireland women's national team come up against Belgium in the second leg of their UEFA Nations League promotion relegation playoff tomorrow evening following a 4-2 victory in the Aviva Stadium last Friday. Ireland are hoping to build on that and seal promotion to League A, which of course would aid their 2027 FIFA Women's World Cup qualifying campaign. Now, Katie McCabe, Ireland captain, is set to join Denise O'Sullivan, Ciara Grant, Emma Byrne, Niamh Fahey, Louise Quinn, Diane Caldwell and Áine O'Gorman on the list of Irish centurions. Tony O'Donoghue is standing by the chat, but first we can hear from Katie McCabe, who was speaking to our soccer correspondent, Tony Dunhill.
I remember one Christmas, actually, I asked Santa Claus for a long-sleeved Damien Duff Ireland jersey with number 11 on the back, because that's just what I like. I manifested I wanted to be like that. I wanted to be like Damien Duff. And, yeah, loved his game, loved his work rate, how positive he was on the ball, the goals he scored. Yeah, just loved everything about him. So, still yet to meet him. I need to meet him. But yeah, he was a massive role model for me growing up.
That was around the time as well that the team had protested against the FAI for the conditions that you were forced to play under. There was a lot of leadership at that time as well that you must have, you know, taken from.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, I was there the day we had the strike in 2017, and it was like Emma, Áine, Steph, Lou, Niamh Fahey, Diane. Like, I could keep going, you know. It was
great role models for you to learn from.
Unbelievable. And the bravery they shown to kind of put their international career on the line for the sake of the team and the better of the team is something I've admired, and something that I've held very dearly with me, because I need to... They showed me their bravery at that time to make sure I had a good safe space and career while I was going to be playing for Ireland. So for me, it was very, very important to kind of take that and hold that dearly, to continue to kind of have those conversations with the FAI if things needed to be changed or improved, to make sure you're better in the team for when you leave it. So yeah, those girls were fantastic role models and people I still look up to this day.
What would be the highlights for you? The last World Cup qualification, I imagine. I mean, that night in Glasgow will live long in the memory.
It has to be Glasgow, doesn't it? It was such an incredible day, incredible achievement. We'd worked so hard. The upset in Ukraine for the Euro qualification really hurt us at the time. So we needed to pick ourselves up, and Vera did that for the team. We turned it round, looked at a different formation, different way of playing, what suited us, our strengths, and kind of went with it. And it got us to our first ever World Cup. And I'll always be very grateful to Vera Powell for that. She'll always be the first manager to get us to a major tournament. And as much as we had our hiccups over the years, it was always for the benefit of the team, you know. We always wanted what was right for the team, and we both wanted to win at the end of the day, and I'll always be grateful for the work she put in for the team, for sure.
A legend of Irish football, Katie McCabe. Tony O'Donoghue joins us from what I believe is very cold Belgium, and Katie McCabe was at the forefront of Ireland's performance on Friday, and she's going to need another big performance if Ireland are going to progress in this two-legged tie, Tony.
Cold is the word, by the way, yeah. Because there are quite a number of Irish fans around the lovely city of Leuven, the Flemish side of Belgium. But yeah, the temperature really dropped and the rain was hammering down today. And hopefully the Dendreve Stadium will stand up to it, and Ireland will maintain their advantage. 4-2 up, of course, from the first leg. But that is a dangerous lead. That second Belgian goal at the Aviva Stadium, that's the one that's causing us a little bit of concern, a little bit of anxiety. But Ireland are in a great position, thanks in no small part to Captain Fantastic herself, Katie McCabe. She's got 31 goals in 99 appearances, a significant milestone coming up tomorrow, 100 caps. She's been captain since she was 21 years of age, the youngest in the history of the team, and she certainly led by example the other evening. So 4-2, Belgium are ranked 27. We're ranked 27. They're ranked 20, so there's 7 places between us. And Belgium have had good results at this stadium as well. They beat England here, the European champions, just last April by 3-2. So I wouldn't be, you know, counting any chickens yet. But I think Carla Ward hit upon something, tweaks, as she might call it. I think the defence was solid. I think Chloe Mustaki at wing back behind Katie McCabe gave Katie licence to get forward. Aoife Mannion played really well on the other side. Denise O'Sullivan, Aruchi Littlejohn, we'll have to see. It's a question of managing their minutes. But, you know, when they both went off the field, that's when Belgium began to get a foothold in the game. So that's important. But I think at the Aviv on Friday night, Ireland led from the front. And I think Kira Carusa and Emily Murphy were terrific. So Carla Ward has a decision to make. Anna Patton was suspended for the first leg, so she'll bring her back into the team, you would imagine, immediately. But that who's going to have to sit out? Because, as I say, that back three or back five, if you want to call it that, did really, really well. But if Katie's in any way the same or similar form to the way she was on Friday, I think we will get through. We'll beat a higher-ranked team, and we'll end up playing in League A next year. And, of course, the benefit of that is that even though we'll be playing stronger teams, if you like, maybe we're better against stronger teams, but we're guaranteed a World Cup playoff. So that's not to be sneezed at. I mean, Katie's highlight in her career was the World Cup, getting to it, first of all, in that famous win in Glasgow over Scotland in the playoff. But she scored in the World Cup final. She hardly mentioned that as we sat down and had a long chat. To score an Olympico direct from the corner kick. Is there anything left from this woman to surprise us? That's what I suppose I should say.
how different will the challenge be tomorrow evening? Because obviously Belgium are going to come out extremely fired up, considering they are chasing a 2-goal deficit. And you've outlined there the threat that they hold at home. So it is a cliched as it is. It's a tough place to go.
It certainly is, yeah. And they had 2 players suspended for the game in Dublin. Justine van der Heermaat, who plays at Crystal Palace, and the Hoffenheim forward, Yil Janssen. So they both should come back from suspension, which you would imagine would help their cause. And obviously they've got some incredible players. The substitute who came on, Marie de Troyer, was really, really good. But Tessa Wooler, their captain, she can score for fun in any company, and she's to be watched. So I think we have to be calm. I mean, we may well concede goals against Belgium, but we do have a 2-goal cushion, and it's worth realizing that, you know, you can't lose the game early. You have to make sure you're in the game. We're 2 goals up, but nothing can be taken for granted against a decent Belgium side, that's for sure.
Okay, listen, Tony, we'll let you continue your prep for tomorrow evening and warm up in a very cold Leuven. You can watch Belgium against the Republic of Ireland in the UEFA Women's Nations League playoffs tomorrow from 7 on RT2, the RT player. Follow a live blog on the RT News app. Or if you want some live radio commentary, we have an extended game on. We are with you all the way until 10 o'clock tomorrow here on 2FM, starting at our usual time of 6 o'clock. Alan Colley and Barry Murphy are with us to continue our association football conversation. And you watch the girls in green on Friday. Are you confident, like Tony is, for a result tomorrow?
If they performed the way they played the other night, Shane, I would be confident. I thought they played really, really well in the game. Obviously Katie gets all the plaudits, Denise as well, but I thought 3 kind of unheralded players really played really, really well. Chloe Mustaki, one of them, played as a left-sided centre half in a 3. And Chloe has had her troubles over the years, but she's a brilliant footballer and just shows kind of how good she is in terms of adapting to playing left full, played in midfield when she was younger, but to play left-sided centre-half, and she played really, really well. And the 2 players up top, Kira Carusa was outstanding and Emily Murphy. And just in terms of, I suppose, Carusa was the one kind of holding the ball up and bringing others into the game and just giving them the platform to build from. And Emily Murphy ran the defenders ragged. She really ran herself into the ground. So 3 players, which bodes well, that obviously everybody focuses on, Katie and Denise and the like. But you don't want to be too reliant on the likes of them. They've been carrying the can for such a long period of time. So it's good to see a couple of new ones emerging and taking the pressure off them, if you like. So if they play as well as they did the other night, Shane, I'd be confident. It's the best I've seen them play in a while. And we mentioned even last week, Carla Ward, I thought in the preparation and her press conference, even about stuff off the field, I thought she performed really, really well and spoke really, really well. So hopefully it's a good sign of things to come.
Okay, we're going to continue our build up to that tomorrow. As I say, we're on air from 6 o'clock with you all the way until 10 o'clock with live coverage of that one. Barry Murphy, we were getting the weekend highlights from Austin O'Malley and Alan Colley at the top of the show. So what caught your eye from the League of Ireland?
Yeah, incredible games over the weekend, wasn't it? The movement in teams up and down the league as the night wore on. It's just incredible that the league isn't over at this stage. Sean McCrover's obviously going up to Derry, not getting the result they needed. Brings it on to Wednesday, a massive game now in Tala. Obviously, Galway are coming with something to play for as well, got to secure that Premier Division status. Pressure's heaped on Rovers to go and get that over the line as quickly as possible. They've had three or four games to go and do it, haven't secured it yet. Have really looked like they've lost all sorts of form at the moment in Europe and in domestically as well.
How concerning should that be? So, listen, obviously they're going to be crowned champions. Even if they were to lose both matches, it is highly, highly, highly unlikely you're going to overturn a double-figure goal difference. But the question of the form, going into a cup final, how concerning should that be for Rovers fans?
Massively concerning. They haven't played well since they beat Bowes in September. You look at the games they've come off, and to be fair, the teams they've come up against, St. Pat's, Shells, they've all had something to play for, where Shamrock Rovers have come off the boil a little bit. Obviously, they've been looking at the FAI Cup game. They put out a full-strength team. They sacrificed the game in Europe to do that against Kerry at home. Got through that. They didn't play well in the second game against Celtic as well. They were beaten well in that game. Going into Derry, I just thought they'd have enough to go up there and get a point. I thought they set up to go and get a point. Derry were excellent and had their own ambitions as well. Secure that second spot, try and secure that second spot. And that second spot is going to be huge this year as well. Shell's obviously still in the race for it. When you look at the Europa League is up for grabs. If Rovers do go and win that league, that position is up for grabs. Gives you a great chance in Europe next year, should you secure that. So going down to the last day of the season, I've never seen so much on the line in terms of, obviously last year we had a massive last day for yourself and Shells, but coming into this season, just so much on the last two games.
And no,
last,
nine out of the 10 teams will have something to play for going into the final day of the season, which is just...
It's incredible.
It's utterly incredible. And exactly what we want, Alan Carter.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, Shane. For all of us that obviously followed the league so intently and from a media aspect as well, I think it's brilliant. I would agree with Barry. I think Shamrock Rovers, their form has been so poor. You look at them the last 10 games, they've only picked up 6 points. Sorry, their last five games, 6 points out of 15. And before that as well, in terms of the last 10 games, it's really poor as well, 15 out of 30. So the wheels have, not the wheels have come off, but they're certainly slipping up, and not just in the league form as well, as Barry said, obviously the two European games. So there would be slight concerns for Stephen Bradley. They are going to get over the line, but I just feel this kind of stutter that has taken place, I just think it takes the gloss off it a little bit. Now look, Shane, in 10-15 years time, nobody will be looking back saying, oh, they stuttered over the line. It'll go down in the record books as another league title. But just in terms of Shamrock Rovers and their legacy and what Stephen is trying to leave behind and emulate those great teams that he speaks about, the four in a row and these type of teams that were winning doubles and trebles, like, there's no real rival for them. Like, the leagues that they've won, they've won them on merit, but like, I think back at Dundalk, Cork City, those brilliant rivalries and the two of them going toe to toe, they haven't really had that, bar last year against Shelburne, and Shelburne obviously got over the line, and that was partly down to Shamrock Rovers early starting the season as well. So I think it will be a little bit concerning, Shane. As I said, they will get over the line and get the league done. But they're heaping pressure on themselves that's needless, really. Like, they could have got it over the line 3-4 weeks ago. Now, that's not to take away from St. Pat's and the teams that have beaten them, obviously Shelburne as well, and then Derry yesterday. And Derry have been really good. Like, when you look at Derry as well, their form in recent weeks has been very, very good. And I think Tiernan Lynch deserves a little bit of credit just in terms of the fact that it's his first season in the job. Yes, they have a big budget. Yes, there's a lot of resources at his disposal, but you still have to go and deliver. So I think that bodes well for them for next year to maybe go and mount the proper serious challenge to try and win a league. And you have Shelburne now coming with Joey O'Brien, who's been absolutely fantastic. So that hopefully will be good for us for the league next year, that we might have a proper title challenge.
Absolutely. When you look at the teams going for Europe, Barry, How will the manner of the defeat yesterday for Bowes affect them going up against Drogheda in Drogheda as well? So it's not even in Daly Mount Park, and Pats go to Tolka Park to play Shelburne, who of course still have something to play for, looking for that second spot, and hopefully hoping Cork City can get a result against Derry City in Turner's Cross. So who do you fancy for fourth position as it stands?
It's like a toss up, isn't it? Like,
you have to name one, Barry.
I thought Pats went to Bowes last week and played for a draw, and I thought they'd go to at home to Waterford and put all their eggs in their basket, go and beat Waterford, and it puts them in the pole position to get that spot. You look at Bowes, that's a massive body blow the other night, if not a knockout blow. You just look at their form last 12 games. 22 wins they picked up against Cork and Waterford. They've lost 6 and drawn 4. It's incredibly bad form. And you look at, they had an early spell in April and May where really they got themselves back into contention against Shamrock Rovers. Since then, they've been really poor. And the manner of defeat the other night, the crowd on their back, going up to a really tough place in Drogheda where the crowd are right on you, knowing they have to get a result. Shells aren't going to do them any favours against Pats as well. They're going to want to win that game. So they've got to go and get a result there and hope and rely on somewhere else. So for me, it probably is going to be maybe St. Pats against Shells. Shells got the results the other night. I think they're the ones that the onus is really on to go and get the win.
I saw Kevin Doherty give an interview after the draw against Galway, I think it was, because he needs Shelburne to beat Bowes and to beat Pats, and he said, I have a couple of Shells jerseys hanging about in the wardrobe, I think, from his playing days. So
he was jumping around the place yesterday. I do, and people will think, like, obviously because I'm pushing for Kev, but he's done an unbelievable job, as we all know, everybody knows that. But just in terms of, you look at their home form as well, they're fifth in the table, they've played 17 games and 30 points, which is a decent record at home. That I don't think Bowes have beaten them this season as well, so that's psychologically to have that over them as well. Bowes, as Barry said, are coming into the game off such a downer on Sunday, but their recent form has been absolutely dreadful, and the worst possible time to go on your worst possible run as well. So I think Drogheda are the ones that have an unbelievable chance, because you look at Shelburne, they've won 5 on the bounce now in the league as well. Joey O'Brien, he's speaking about finishing second, so he's not going to take his foot off the gas as well, Shane, next week for St. Pat's. I've always said about St. Pat's in recent weeks, even though they've picked up a little bit, I just think there's something lacking there that we've kind of seen all season, a lot of inconsistency. So I think Drogheda have and there's nobody speaking about, I think I'm the only one speaking about Drogheda. Nobody's speaking about Drogheda. And they've a great chance. They've a brilliant chance of finishing fourth.
They're coming under.
Which would be an unbelievable job when you think everybody was tipping them to go down at the start of the season.
Yeah, and even the mental blow of not getting into Europe.
Everyone has a soft spot for them now, don't they? They're going to want to see them get that fourth position after what happened to them this year.
They're everyone's second favourite team except for the champions of the first division this year.
So. Yeah.
Right, who's going to be in a relegation playoff? Just a note, actually, Treaty United beat Cove Ramblers 1-0 on Friday. Bray Wanderers had a 1-0 win over UCD. Second legs are tomorrow evening, so we'll keep you updated on those with the Ireland-Belgium match, of course. So a lot hinges on Galway-Shamrock Rovers on Wednesday night. As I mentioned, that's at Talla Stadium. But then you look at Galway, Sligo Rovers, Waterford, all on 38 points. Galway, of course, with the game in hand. So who, if anyone, is in the driving seat in this one?
Galway, for me. I think they come to Tallaght. They usually perform well in Tallaght. They've got a couple of decent results there over the last season or two. It's the goal difference for me. That's the big factor here. -6 for Galway. Sligo -13. You see Sligo go to Shamrock Rovers. What position are they going to be in on the last day of the season? Will they be celebrating the league title and take the eye off that game? Waterford, it's really out of their hands. They've got Galway at home the last day of the season. Can Galway go and get a point in Tallaght and take themselves out of that situation? And
Sligo, do you think they will?
I think they will. I just feel the way Shamrock Rovers are playing at the moment, Galway are perfectly set up to go to Tallaght and get a result the way they play. Big Hickey's found a little bit of form of late. He did really well there last season. I just fancy Galway to come at shut up shop and get a point.
Okay. Paul Recarman, of course, with Waterford.
I was in the showground, Shane, Saturday night, and I have to say it was a missed opportunity. Now, in fairness to Cork, you have to give them credit. And in terms of the integrity of the league as well, people might have been thinking a relegated team, they've the cup final in a couple of weeks, that they'll take their eye off the ball. They played really well, Cork. And there was no kind of holding back whatsoever. So I think it was a missed opportunity for Sligo Rovers. And I'd be slightly concerned now, because as Barry said, I would fancy Galway to get a point in Talla during the week. And also then, if they draw on the last day of the season and Sligo Rovers lose to Shamrock Rovers, they're the ones in the playoffs. So I'd be a little bit concerned now, Shane. I thought that was a real missed opportunity on Saturday.
And a lot of people as well actually saying that Cork City will have nothing to play for last game of the season. But they've a cup final, so it's the last game in Turner's Cross. Everything that's gone on, you want to kind of galvanise that sport and have that good feeling.
He played Maguire for 45 minutes and he played McLaughlin. Obviously, they're two key players. Swapped them around, but everyone else played. Like, it was a strong team. And they're very professional. Jaron Nash, David Myler. So there's absolutely no question about that. I thought they actually played very well, to be fair, Cork.
Yeah, 51552 is the text number. If Mason Mealy wins the Golden Boot, it would be some achievement at such a young age. Mason Mealy and Padraig Am are currently tied on 13 goals. We talk about the comparison of Anne-Marie McGlynn and Ava Crean, the up-and-coming star and the experienced star. I'm sure Park Armour won't mind me calling him that. A bit further afield, the English Premier League. So, Arsenal, they've gone from bottlers to boring. But I say Arsenal fans will take that. They'll take it.
Well, Shane, I'll take it as well, because I've been shouting about them for 3 years and you've been laughing at me every year. So,
well, that's when they were with the butlers tag. Now they're on the boring tag, but they're winning matches at least.
Yeah, well, you could actually label that at a lot of teams that have become boring, because it's all set pieces. It's like a set piece league now. When you look at the teams that are up there as well, Spurs, and I think he's made a big difference, Thomas Frank. You look at the stats on what they conceded last year, and I don't mean to keep bringing up Ange Postecoglou, but they conceded 15 goals last year.
But you will anyway.
For set pieces. Yeah. But if you actually listen to this, Shane, and it just goes to show you in terms of the detail of what managers are looking at now and how important it is. He said in a press conference last year how he's not bothered about set pieces. To concede 15 goals last year, already Frank has made a difference. They've only conceded one. So it's a massive, massive part of the game now. Arsenal, the reckoner, on course to win a league on set pieces alone. When you look at the 16 goals they've scored, 9 of them have come from set pieces. They're actually really lowly ranked in open play goals, 17th in the league, but in set pieces they're number one. So it's become such a huge part of the game. We spoke about Keith Andrews on the game against Saturday night against Liverpool. Again, long throws, set pieces, all these things you can use to your advantage, and they're a real part of the game, which I think absolutely use them if you have a player like Coyote who's firing the ball in the way he was the other night. So
he was excellent in all departments.
Yeah, and I think Arsenal, to be fair, like, Arteta's done an unbelievable job in building what he's built over time, and this is it now. As we keep saying, he has to get over the line, but I think in terms of what he's built, they can, obviously technically they're so good, but the likes of that, if you want to battle you or you want a physical challenge, whatever, they can match up in any department whatsoever, and Gabriel has been absolutely unbelievable at the back.
Paul from Sligo sends in a text. I think the soccer pundits in general sticking the boot into Liverpool at the moment, and rightly so. However, they should remember that they lost a great player and friend in July, of course, in Diogo Jota, and we all remember the tears flowing down Mo Salah's face, and pundits might keep that in mind with their analysis, and I think a lot of people are, to be fair. But when you look at this Liverpool team and the rut that they're in at the moment, what do you put that down to in terms of, is it tactics, is it application, or what do you feel?
Probably felt he had to go and spend money after last season to try and rejuvenate things. They couldn't kind of go on from the way they were last season. They were so good that he's upset the apple cart a little bit too much for me. Obviously, it's well documented, trying to get Vert, Salah, Ekitike, Gakpo all into the same team with Isak as well, and how you figure that out. Does it push Salah out of a little bit? Well, I think it's a massive point about Salah and the way he was with Jota. Best mates with Jota. It's only July, we have to remember. It's so close that he's lost a best mate and he's fallen off form, and the mental kind of toll that takes on a player as well. He's fallen off a little bit, but he looked back to not form, but he was brilliant the other night, that goal. But for me as well, Alisson's a massive missing goal from, I think they don't concede that goal. I think Marmadash really got down too early with that one-on-one. Van Dijk, Kanate have kind of depended on Alisson to pull him out a lot. Kept a really high line last season, and the amount of one-on-one saves Alisson dug them out of last season. I think Marmadash really just isn't up to the standard of Alisson, so he gets him out of it.
Is he an upgrade on Quevin Keller?
Not for me at all. I think it is a downgrade. And obviously, from Quevin's point of view, he had to get out of there and play. I would have liked him to hold on a little bit longer and go for somebody like a Chelsea, a Spurs type team. Obviously, when a Brentford come in and you're talking to Thomas Frank at the time, he probably sold him the dream, but waits a couple of weeks and sees that Frank has left. He maybe bit the bullet a bit too early, but it's working out for him at the moment. He's doing well with Brentford and a good manager. But just for Liverpool, I think they will come good. I think it will click eventually. It's just about putting the square pegs in the square holes.
Very much so. And even communication with the back four. We have talked about false dawns at Old Trafford and Manchester United for many, many weeks, Alan Colley. But is this final? finally, when we see it perhaps clicking, even Ruben talked about the atmosphere changing and that kind of mindset changing, that it isn't just about the on-field stuff around United.
Yeah, hopefully, Shane, because there has been too many false dawns. And for anybody who loves football in general and not just Man United supporters, you want to see a competitive Manchester United. I know for a large spells there and rival fans, you'd kind of laugh at the demise, if you like. But you want to see a proper Manchester United going toe-to-toe with a Liverpool or Man City or whatever the case may be. And to be fair to Amorim, considering all the stick that he has taken, everybody questioning everything about him, his team, his tactics, his system, all the questions that have been raised, they've stuck it out for now. And now, as you say,
is he proving those doubts? Is he proving the Alan Colleys of the world wrong?
Well, hopefully, Shane, you would like to see that, but I wouldn't be judging it over three games. There needs to be a longer pattern or a longer winning sequence for me before you can kind of say that they've completely turned it around. But the one thing I will give him credit for, and in terms of and maybe sometimes we focus too much on managers and systems, at the end of the day it's about good players. And if you look at Cunha and Mbeumo, huge additions to that team and in what they've brought, not just as a goal threat, but just their quality alone. And another one is Ahmad, who was in and out last year, missed a lot of football, but he's a serious talent. He's been absolutely brilliant. I think the goalkeeper has come in, has been very good so far. Again, it's a small sample size, only three or four games, but he looks the part. Hopefully that can continue as well. So there's four big pluses, if you like, that they didn't have last year. So I would love to think things are turning around, they're on the right course, but they've a huge game at the weekend now against Nottingham Forest. Forest themselves have gone through their own troubles and got beaten again at the weekend, so Sean Dyche, we know the way he sets up, so it'll be a tough game. But to answer your question, and it was a long-winded one, Shane, I hope to God it's not a false dawn and that we have kind of turned the corner, Manchester United.
Yeah,
just with that, like, he always spoke about it. It's not a 3-4-3. It's, I want to have a base of a 3-4-3 and then be able to move into other formations. It's about nailing down that 3-4-3. Going for that, you just look at nuances within that. Ahmad and Mbeumo on the right, and you have Dallow and Shaw on the left, more defensively minded. Seems to be favouring down the right hand side for attacking, and there's real flexibility in that movement. And you look at the way he played against Liverpool with the false nine, with Cunha up top as well, and Sesko plays the other night. So there is nuances within that 3-4-3. Maybe it's taking a bit of time to enact that on the pitch, but I think it's starting to show signs on the pitch now.
Talk to me about Keith Andrews and Brentford and his management style and just the energy that he exudes, even in that, which was a bit of a classic match, to be fair, against Liverpool. And we talked about Coyote and the long throws, but he was just, that individual in particular was just brilliant everywhere, across all the pitches, up and down. I think he's one of the highest passes, a successful percentage as well. And you can feel that energy on the pitch when you watch Brentford.
Yeah, he's just so eloquent as well, that as a football fan watching him, you're getting a real insight into what he's trying to do on the pitch, off the pitch. Yeah. And I saw a brilliant video during the week of him in pre-season talking to Damsgaard and Shadda, and he was talking about when the ball breaks for us and Shadda needs to be in between that right back and the centre half for a ball threaded in. And you saw that exact play the other night against Liverpool, and you're looking at that and going, if that's what we're seeing, what a professional footballer has been given, what kind of things have they been told in training that they can influence the games? And it's just, his message is clear, it's concise. They've obviously got 8 goals and throw-ins this season. The Coyote throw-in is incredible, and that's a brilliant platform to start any game and then work off, try and get the second and third game and kill teams off. But so far it's been brilliant.
Okay, James.
And again, it goes back to, he did a lot of media work, he's so polished.
Yeah.
And narratives are created now off the back of interviews alone, like, because everything's so instant. Social media, there's memes, there's all sorts going out like that, instant.
Everyone's a body language expert.
Yeah, whether you're good, bad, people will make judgments on that. And we used to kind of be so judgmental about life in general. Now people are judgmental off the back of interviews and all sorts of things. And you can quickly build up a negative persona, if you like, or whatever. So I think the work that he has done in the media as well, I think has really helped him in this regard. But in terms of his messaging for the players, we even seen the little clip after the match where he came in with the man of the match trophy and gave it to Coyote, and it was a lovely moment, and he stood up in the dressing room and spoke. I think we're getting an insight into maybe the modern day dressing room, maybe not what we see fellas pulling the heads off each other, Shane, which was alright for the time, I suppose, but now it's a kind of totally different interaction, if you like, between a manager and a player. And he's very, very good at that, Andrews, and long may it continue, because at the end of the day he's an Irish manager in the biggest league in the world, and fair play to him.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap up our football conversation. Before we do, I know Manchester City are in a bit of a rut. Now, I know fans of Bournemouth or Sunderland will be screaming at me saying we're in the top four, but are Manchester City and Liverpool still Arsenal's title contenders realistically?
I don't know if they are. If you look at Arsenal, they were a team building to do well in this set-piece era. I think, to be fair to Pep Guardiola, he noticed that in the goalkeepers. I think he made the decision with Edison fairly early on to bring Donnarumma in. He obviously had James Trafford in there, who's a good footballing goalkeeper, but saw the way the league was going in terms of having to deal with these set-piece situations, brought Donnarumma in, addressed that. He's done really well. But for me, they just look like they don't quite know what they are at the moment. Are we a passing team? Are we set pieces? And we counter-attacking team, and that's getting lost. And you look at the other day, Aston Villa picking them off for the set piece again, and they just couldn't find a way to get Haaland on the ball up in the higher echelons of the pitch, and just couldn't find a way to break Aston Villa down.
Okay,
well, I think Bournemouth fans should be shouting it to Shane, because I saw a stat at the weekend.
They're going to maintain this push, aren't they?
And it's not maintain the push, but if you look at, I saw a stat over the weekend, and this is incredible. That the same weekend 2 years ago, when Andoni Areola took over, only six other teams who are top superpowers in the league, if you like, have performed better and accumulated more points. He's on 119 points over 76 games. When you think of the resources that he's working off, the small budget compares to those teams, he's the best performing manager in the league over that 2 year period. It's absolutely incredible. You lose Huijsen, you lose Abarni, you lose Kerkez, and these fellas are not going to Nottingham Forest and Stoke. They're going to PSG, Real Madrid, Liverpool. So it tells you the quality of these players that have gone out of the club, and he's able to bring in a young lad that played yesterday, scored Croupy, only 19 years of age. So the recruitment is incredible. But the job that he's doing in such a short period of time to get players out, new ones in, and still to perform at this level, unbelievable.
No, it certainly is. Massive credit to Bournemouth. Apologies if I've offended any Bournemouth fans listening. Alan Colley, Barry Murphy, thank you both very much for your company. We will continue football and all the European chat tomorrow with Mark Langdon. Plenty more besides. We're taking a short ad break, and Austin O'Malley is going to round up all the drama from the Gaelic Games County Finals.
This is 2FM. Game on. Gaelic football.
Now, Austin O'Malley is back with us as we review all of the drama from the weekend's county finals. And just to mention, actually, well, the Westmead hurling final took place today. Castletown Gaegan retained the Westmead senior hurling title for the first time since completing a historic three in a row in 1958 with a fully deserved 9-point win against Loughlin Gaels in a hard-hitting final replay in Mullingar, 3:15-2:9 at the final score in that one. Austin O'Malley, I picked your brain at the top of the show as to what your weekend highlight was. We went down the marathon tangents, but what was your highlight from the weekend's county finals?
I think there were so many brilliant county finals, and like, even starting, I think, in my own home county, the replay, Westford and Ballina, I have to give a nod to it, because it was just an extraordinary final coming off the back of, I suppose, what happened in the first one with Frank Erwin, you know, digging it out for Ballina. Ballina heading for a three in a row. Westford, you know, were the last team to beat them in 22. But I suppose as the game just transpired, you know, Ballina 10 points adrift with less than, you know, 10 minutes to go, looked dead and buried. Westward looked like they had both their hands on the Moclair Cup. But, you know, I think this final will probably be known as the Evan Regan final. Like, just what the man done in the last 10 minutes was incredible. Going down the stretch, he engineered a really, you know, a goal from a quick free, hit 1-4. The two-pointer to level it, deep in injury time, 22 phases, 2 minutes, Ballina held the ball, and then he popped up with the winner after Ballina had you know, fetched a Westport kick out. So I just think the drama in that one, in terms of what was on the line, going for three in a row and so on, was just an incredible feat. And obviously Westport, look, it'll take a while for this one to probably, you know, maybe wash out the system, but that was a huge moment. And Ballina making history. I don't think they had, you know, a three in a row in their history since maybe going back to the 20s and so on.
1920s. Regan, the intercounty team's nutritionist. Actually, I saw Dundalk beat St Pat's in the Leinster Senior Cup final last night, and they had their S&C coach on the bench. Dundalk did.
That's
the level of the Leinster Senior Cup with respect to the thing. Okay. Might we see an Evan Regan here now lining out for?
Well, do you know what? This is a guy that he's been arguably one of the best forwards in Mayo for the last number of years in terms of his score. Like, and he's a guy that I always thought that probably, you know, was maybe let out to grass a little bit too early. He's an incredible professional, as you said, by trade. He's a nutritionist. And he's obviously the Mayo nutritionist, but and again, he's what Mayo probably need in terms of a left-sided finisher. You know, I don't think Mayo have had one of those since probably Conor Mortimer went, in terms of the quality of a finisher. I watched him throughout the championship. He's been superb, but this will certainly be known as his final, I think.
One of the stories on Sunday was in Ulster, where the Grimley family were celebrating on two fronts. So Armagh star Niall Grimley and his brother Liam were on the field as Madden claimed their first ever county triumph with a fair degree of swagger, blowing past Culliana with 11 points to spare. Next door in Tyrone, home to a famously competitive county championship with the last retention coming all the way back in 2005, Loch McCrory nabbed a late winner to edge out Trillick, beaten in the final for the second year running. a brilliant story for the Grimleys.
Oh, it's incredible. And like, I mean, it's so novel when you think about it. You know, in the Grimley household this week, you'll have possibly the Gerry Fagan Cup, which is the Armagh Cup, and the O'Neill Cup from Tyrone. But to think, just, I suppose, you know, it's well documented in terms of the tragedy that has hit the Grimley family since 23, when they lost their brother Patrick and his wife Kira in that accident, you know. But to see the emotion yesterday when Madden got across the line, and obviously it was a novel pair and beating Cullyhanna, who both, they were both in their first senior final, and just to see the way that played out, and you know, the Grimley brothers were at the heart of it again there. Particularly Connor, he had a huge, huge game, kicking eight scores over the evening. But and then I suppose you go across to Tyrone, and you have the story of Loch McCrory, you know, which is incredible. Again, they're a very, very small club.
Hadn't reached the last four before this season. So Ryan Grimley, with the brother that came on as a late substitute for such a small club to achieve that in such a competitive club championship that is.
I mean,
own.
The Tyrone Championship is one of the most competitive, if not the most competitive in the country, and for a small club like that to rise through the ranks, and you know, they're hemmed in there. They're only, I think, about maybe 8 miles or so east of Oma. Very
oh, really?
Yeah, okay. very small population. So for Marty Boyle, their manager, to get them across the line, obviously they have a brilliant coach there as well, Kieran Mina, who's the, you know, he's from there, but he's obviously, we know his pedigree in terms of he's the new Derry manager and so on. But they have a couple of smashing young players, and young Owen McElhone has caught the eye, obviously, at underage for Tyrone and Tyrone Senior. But he was superb, you know, as a driving force. He had 4 points across the evening. But and Cathal Donaghy, another guy in the centre of the field, hit five. But Gordon Donaghy hit the late winner on you know, into injury time, and you know, he franked, I suppose, the win. But an incredible Trillick are a super side, and they're star studded again, and they have a huge history in you know, that Tyrone Championship in terms of what they've done prior as well.
From Ulster to Munster, another team with huge history is Austin Stacks. However, they were defeated. Austin Stacks 112, Dungannon Coosh 213. So emotional success for a Gaeltacht area in Kerry, winning their first Kerry crown since 1948. Plenty of near misses over the years. In the modern era, they'd lost county finals in 2012, 18, 24. They lost the Munster club final penalties to Castlehaven in 2023. Which they had qualified for winning the Kerry Club Championship, a separate competition excluding the divisional outfits who aren't eligible to progress beyond Kerry, which is a discussion for another day.
Another awesome. Day,
we
yeah,
go down that rabbit
show.
Hole of this of explaining the Kerry Club Championship. But they trailed Austin Stacks for most of the game until Paul Ganey, a veteran of all the previous final losses, buried two goals in the final 10
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, an incredible performance, really, when you think about it. And just again, watching the emotion that spilled out in Tralee after this one. But Paul Ganey had a superb afternoon. He came away with 2-2. I think the three Ganeys in total hit 2-9 out of Dangan and Cush's 2-13, which was a huge return from those guys. But for him, you know, it was just, it was clearly a very, very special moment. As you've alluded to there, they'd lost finals in 12, 18 and 24.
Coming back from that hurt.
Coming back from that hurt. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, down in Kerry probably thought that maybe they'd missed their opportunity here. But, I mean, they've a decade there where they've been coming and they've been building. But, you know, another notable performer there was Tom O'Sullivan. I thought he was immense throughout the hour. He was the guy that put in those two long raking balls for Ganey. But, again, just that little bit of class, Ganey. The first finish, you know, it was like almost like a glancing header, but he just got his hand to it, tucked it into the corner, and the second one, literally, you know, it was through a buttonhole he had to put it when it was slipped back to him. So a huge victory for them. You can see what it means to them. Also, you know, a smaller rural club, a club that are full of history and culture and heritage, and just watching some of the clips online that have come off the back of this, and you know, pipe bands back in Dingle.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant, like, and it's just, this is the glory of winning a club, I suppose, you know, and how special these club competitions are. I've said here before, in terms of the intercounty is great, but just for the raw and the emotion and the stories that are laced in and peppered throughout the championships, and it's great when a club wins because it gives an opportunity to pull these kind of stories up, you know, and it brings a real flavour to the whole thing.
Yeah, the bonfires and the parades, it's brilliant. And it seems to be a new trend. The Monday club and the Sunday club, they're jerseys. So they are. That's apparently the new thing.
This
all
is the
players
new thing,
are wearing
yeah.
random jerseys.
Which yeah, it's brilliant. It brings out a little bit extra flavour and colour to the whole.
Something different. Something different. Because there was a few, Nafina, very fortunate to get over the line, current All-Ireland champions in the Dublin Hurling Champions against Lucan Sarsfields, managed by Kilkenny legend Charlie Carter. That was on Saturday. And I know we're flip-flopping between Saturday and Sunday, but talk to me about the Galway final. Mick Cullen 117, Salthill knocked Nacara 115. So they've collected the Frank Fox Cup for a third time, and Galway captain Sean Kelly finished with 1-2 in a man of the match performance. We talked about Paul Gainey, Tom O'Sullivan, big players standing up when it matters most for your club.
Yeah, and Sean Kelly, he's a mince player. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I've been looking at over the last number of years since he sort of burst on the scene with Galway. But you know, he's one of these guys again that he's just such a warrior. Even from the get go, from the throw in, he was the guy that absolutely tore through Mike Cullen and a ball in the back of the net. You know, and they played quite well in fits and starts, you would say. But like, there was a really, really brilliant Salthill team that had players like Matthew Thompson, Rob Finnerty, who ended up with 5, and Thompson had 5. But it just took that little bit of extra know-how by Mike Cullen to dig it out. Like, they went in at the break a handful of scores up, but came out.
It was a 2-point free in the 60th minute.
Yeah,
Desi Keneally stepping up to the plate with crucial late scores. That one in particular, of course, the winning score. But it just, those, the matches we've spoken about, not even today, but the last couple of weeks as well, so many replays, so many tight contests across the board in these finals.
There really has, yeah. And it's been a trend, I think, throughout the whole season, and games that you just cannot write any team off. You know, we looked throughout even the weekend again in terms of, you know, big scorelines being turned over. And this one, even there, like looking at Mike Cullen, like they dug out the three of the last 4 scores to just get across the line. And that's how tight and tenacious that was. But again, like, we talk about quality and people coming to the boil at the right times. We mentioned Kelly, but also Desi Keneally that you alluded to there. Huge score. But a big introduction off the bench as well was Peter Cook, who came on, like, and he's a fantastic footballer, and he clipped over a couple of big 2-pointers for them. And he'd only, obviously, he's based in America, and he came back for the semi as well. But to have a guy of that quality to come in, you know, they really are game changers. And he's just showed his worth again in terms of when he gets on the ball, but the amount of possession that he handles as well. And he's such a big physical presence. Actually, I suppose there's a subplot to that one that, you know, and it's worth mentioning, that when these two teams met before, Lord Rest John O'Mahony was over Salthill, and Don Kennellan was over Mike Cullen. So both have passed away since. So there was a lot of emotion around Galway over the weekend leading into that one as well.
Yeah, poignant victory speech by Captain David Wynn, who of course paid tribute to Don Manager in 2020 and the 22 success as well. Caroline Currit, performance coach, I think, with Mike Cullen.
Yeah, that's
off the top of my head,
I heard that. Yeah, obviously, again, a wealth of experience and an absolute pro.
Her list of records is just...
It's incredible. Yeah,
unbelievable.
Incredible
in terms of what she's...
That would be an interesting read.
Massive congratulations as well to Kilkenny's Ballyhale Shamrock's most successful club in Kilkenny, now overtaking Tullerone and Lochmore Castellani as well. Buttressed their reputation as the dominant force in the club scene in Tipperary. Austin O'Malley, thank you very much as always for outlining all of that. That is all we have time for this evening. Massive thank you for tuning in. We're back tomorrow with an extended Game On from 6 until 10 p.m. with live coverage of Ireland's Women's Nations League promotion relegation playoff second leg against Belgium, our usual European football roundup, and plenty more besides. Today's show was produced by Gary Moran, and our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. Up next here on 2FM, the new music show with Beda Da Silva. So from all of the Game On team, have a great bank holiday evening. We'll chat to you tomorrow. Mind yourself, it's bye for now.
Game On. Hurling.